Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast. Now, I am so excited about today's guest. You may know him from his time on The Last Leg, which he's now been doing for the last 10 years. Alex Brooker is joining me today on the podcast, and you are going to absolutely love this episode. This is one of the first times that Alex has actually talked about the loss of his dad publicly, and hearing him speak about him was just... you would think that he did this for a living. He spoke about his dad so candidly and his dad's story, what it was like when he died and his dynamic with his family, and also the kind of internal struggles that he faces with dealing with his grief and with guilt, like so many others do. I've got no doubt that you're going to love this episode. I hope you enjoy it, and let's get right in. So first of all, Alex, welcome to the Dead Parent Club podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm so excited about this. I suppose the best thing to do to start with is, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to our listeners, and then we kind of go into a bit of what life was like for you growing up, basically. Set the scene.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm Alex Brooker. Some people might know me from Last Leg and various other kind of comedy entertainment shows. So I was born in Croydon. We moved from Croydon to Kent when I was quite young. For people that don't know, I bang on about it all the time on telly, so if you've seen any of the telly, the fact that I'm disabled is not going to come as a surprise to you. So I was born with hand and arm disabilities, had a foot amputated when I was 13 months old, and I think for my mum and dad, they're from Croydon, which is a lovely place, and they've got lots of family there, but I think they were worried about maybe me getting bullied and thought it was less chance of it if we went to Kent. So they were like, no,
it, do you know what, ridiculous, it's ridiculous saying that out loud, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is, but I look at it now and we went to Kent and, like, you know, it was good. You know, I've got two brothers, and my dad remarried when I was like 11, and I've got three half brothers as well. But I can say five brothers, yeah. So all boys. My dad had all boys.
Blinking it.
Yeah, so I'm the eldest of six.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Intense.
Yeah. No, it is. So yeah, it was quite mad cap lot growing up, and then obviously I went to uni in Liverpool when I was 19. I had a gap year. Didn't do anything good. Didn't like go to find myself or anything like that. I worked at Tesco in Ashford and Kent, and that was my gap year. Then I went to uni, so I started later. And I kind of never really, you know, I've been in television for 10 years now, but I've kind of always basically lived up north.
What did you do before television?
So I was a sports journalist. I did journalism at uni. Went over to Leeds, worked for a company called Press Association in East Yorkshire, and, you know, started there at the end of 2006. So I did that for like 6 years. I auditioned for Channel 4 to be a reporter at the Paralympics. That's what I was going to do. I was going to be a touchline reporter. And so I auditioned for them, trained. I did so much research, all knowledgeable to be the best reporter I could be. I did the first day for Channel 4 at the opening ceremony at London 2012, interviewed David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister then. So that's the first time I was on telly.
Wow.
I interviewed the Prime Minister live.
The big boys.
I was crapping myself. Then Boris Johnson, who was the Mayor of London then, I interviewed him shortly after. And I thought I was going to be a reporter. I thought I was meant to be the reporter for The Last Leg. And they put me on the sofa for the first 5 minutes of the first show. Me and Josh Widdicombe weren't on together on the first show. We swapped out.
Okay.
And it was just so people knew who I was if they saw me pop up later on in the week. And then I came in the next day and they said, oh, we want to keep you on that show. And I generally thought I'd done something wrong. Because I was like, well, you know, this is like a comedy show. I'm not funny. A lot of people say I'm still not. But it was like, I'm not funny. So what are you doing with me on here?
Mm.
And in the end, like, the producer was like, look, this is a really good opportunity for you. Just believe me, just trust in it. And yeah, I stopped being a journalist that day. And now, and I've, you know, 10 years on, I do comedy.
Yeah, have a look back.
I do in some ways. There is part of me that still would have liked to have been a serious reporter, but that, I mean, not really. I've had the most incredible 10 years. You couldn't ask for more. The stuff I've got to do and the experiences I've had and the work that I've done, it's been big, you know, to suddenly go from a 9-day contract on Channel 4, I was going to come back up to Leeds, we're going to go on holiday, and then I was going to try and get my old job back. I never had any aspirations in telly past that, and I just thought, oh, it's nice to earn a bit of coin. Mm. Go on holiday to Mexico, we're going on holiday, and it was like, right, we'll do that in the October and come back. And then, yeah, it's everything changed so quickly, and it's been an absolute roller coaster of 10 years. I've been so lucky. I cannot describe just how lucky I've got. I can't believe, you know, that I'm coming up to 10 years in August since I started. I never could have imagined it. So yeah, it's been a mad kind of journey for me. So yeah, it's been an incredible journey, so to speak. And obviously I hope that this time now isn't kind of the end of it. I hope
it's all downhill for me.
Yeah. But I always thought, you know, I'll do a year telly, do a couple of years of telly. I'll get found out. I'll stop getting work. And then after a while, it was like, I got really nervous because suddenly it became my job.
Mm.
And I was like,
it's your life, really.
Yeah, so now it's like, I've been doing this longer than what I was ever a journalist. But wow. I still call myself a journalist, even though people would be like, hang on a minute, we saw you like dress up as like a chicken on telly the other night and last week. And I'm like, yeah, I still have the degree in that. I'm still probably trained. I was really classically trained.
I do my research.
Yeah, I do. And it's like, so the world I kind of live in now is very far away. Mm. But at the same time, it's been great fun. And you know, for my brothers and stuff like that, you know, I've taken them to shows, and they've all been up to Last Leg at different points, and you know, kind of been in the audience and come for the drink afterwards. So it's been lovely.
I bet it was mad for your mum and dad as well, because no kid ever kind of imagined, you know, bringing the child up, going into journalism, and suddenly you're on telly.
Yeah, it was mad for them. It was really was. I think my mum still can't believe that I'm still not living in Kent, and I've not lived there since 2003.
The audacity.
Yeah, and I think that there was an aspect of that where I think that she always hoped I'd come back. Aww. And yeah, I suppose it was crazy for them because they had to adjust to it. It's an incredible job, an incredible life. You have to adjust to certain things. Online abuse was one of them. Like my mum, oh man, I'd do a show and you just like, because I follow her, so you'd see her like gobbing off at someone. And like my dad went on Twitter, he lasted a week. He was searching my name, and like he only ever sent like 3 tweets, and one of them was like telling some bloke to my phone who like said something horrible about me. And my mum certainly was a real still now, you know, she's always there. I was like, don't search on Twitter. I don't.
Mm.
If you search for it, you'll find it, believe me. And I feel like that aspect of it was difficult. Obviously, the idea that all of a sudden I was on television and I was well known and things like that. That was like kind of mad for them, I suppose. But at the same time, we went through a lot when I was a kid. And since I've had my own kids, I've kind of thought about that a lot more, what it was like for them. And we did. It wasn't easy. You know, you got to bear in mind, when I was born, the world was different to what it is now. You know, obviously, you don't wish that on kind of on anyone, but the landscape, the opportunities that are out there for disabled people, you know, for me wearing a prosthetic, like the legs now, like a, you know, I was gonna say, there's never been a better time to have one leg. But it is a bit like that, you know. It's a good technology is advanced with prosthetics and stuff like that, and you get
didn't you put something on Instagram the other day about the smell of a new
There's nothing like the new leg smell when you get a new leg, like new car smell. Yeah, that was it. There's nothing like it. Yeah, it's, that only lasts as soon as you put it on. Then it's not as nice. But yeah, it is like that. And you know, I think for them, it was always, you know, certainly for my dad certainly, but you know, before he passed, sadly, I think there was a big kind of sense of pride for them that mm-hmm. how far I'd come. Mm. And I think there is sometimes where I do think to myself, I don't really give myself credit in terms of, you know, it's like when I go up the gym and things like that, like I'm not like massively fit, but some of the stuff I'm able to do now and some of the sports I've done and things I've done on last leg, it's a world away from what they were told, you know, when it's like, you know, we don't know if he's going to walk and things like that. Yeah. And as I said, since I've had my own children, that's kind of become more to the forefront of my mind. It's been a real journey for them and for me. And, you know, as I say, it's, you know, I've been very lucky. I have been very lucky in life in terms of the people that I've met, the jobs, the you know, people I've met at work, at school, the friends that I had and things like that, people who looked after me, people who kind of looked out for me at school. You know, all of those things, I have been lucky. The opportunity I got with Channel 4, that I've been lucky that the audiences took to me. I've been lucky that the attitudes towards disability in this country, we're very much like advanced. It shifted after London 2012. I grew up never seeing any disabled people on telly. I almost didn't audition for Channel 4 because I've said it before. I thought, well, there's got to be a reason why none of us are on telly.
Yeah.
There's no one who looks like me on telly. And it was like, well, there must be a reason. Maybe people don't want us on there. And I thought, when I applied for Channel 4, I was like, I just want another job.
Yeah.
It could have been anything. And I was very reticent with that. So it shows you how like landscapes have changed.
Yeah, yeah. I actually really resonate with that. It's my mum that died when I was 20 and she had cerebral palsy and she was born, she was hemiplegic, and her grandma, my nan, my grandma, had said they would told her to just put her in a home. You know, she's not going to achieve anything in life. And it's now that she's died. When I was living with her, I never saw her as being disabled. I was like, she's just my mum. But now that she's died, and I think back at all the things she achieved, and like, you know, 6 months before she died, she cycled the coast to coast from Whitehaven. Wow. And it was, yeah, incredible. And I'm like, oh, fuck me. Like,
yeah.
She was a rock star.
Yeah.
Like, what a
and
queen.
I think for my kids, they've... You know, they're only young, they're 5 and 3, but they've started to, they notice, you know, sometimes they ask me why, daddy, you know, why do you only have 3 fingers and stuff like that? And it's like, you know, I kind of say that's how, you know, I came out with Nanny's tummy and stuff like that. And I remember it's a really big thing for me. But I remember before my eldest was born, like worrying about dropping her and stuff like that. God, I tore myself up in knots about it. And it's like, I remember my best mate coming up to the hospital. And he was just like, we all worry about it. It's not just you. And he went, and you can carry much more. So it's like, don't worry about it. And and then it was like, are they, you know, is she going to, when she notices my hands, is she going to be weird? And I remember the day that she noticed, she was just like, your hand's different than mine, isn't it? And I was like, yeah. And I was thinking, here we go. This is the moment. There was no follow-up. Just carried on.
I love that from kids.
Yeah, it is. And that, like, there's a lovely honesty with children. Yeah. And I think that, you know, certainly sometimes when kids come up and they'll say, what happened there? And then parents are like, no, don't ask that. It's rude. And it's like, well, actually, it's not. I mean, you know, if you're doing it still when you're into your 30s, it does look a bit weird. But I feel like as a kid, you don't have those kind of social expectations, and actually you can just ask what's on your mind, and it's actually really refreshing because it doesn't
come from a malicious place.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. And I feel that very much with my own children, and it's a really big thing for me is to for them to kind of, you know, not feel like I'm any different. And I don't think they do. And as I said, it's if you'd have asked me that 6 years ago, then I'd have been very different, really nervous about it. And that's something that I've learned, and it's been lovely. I'm really fortunate, fortunate.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I suppose we should really get into why you're here, because obviously it is the Dead Parent Club podcast by name, by nature. Obviously, sadly, you are part of this club that none of us wanted to be in so early. If you wouldn't mind kind of introducing us to your dad, what his name was and his story.
So my dad was called Gordon. He passed away in May 2019, so it's coming up for 3 years now since he passed away. I remember he got ill when I was about, I think, 15 or 16. I can never remember, it's Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It was one of the two. Mm. But he got ill. I remember him, you know, I was living with my mum at the time, and I remember just that one day coming home from school and getting a call that he was ill. And so that completely shifted, like, you know, I remember he didn't even really want to tell us, you know, he's kind of not old school, but he very much was the sort of, we would never have known how ill he got. Yeah. when he did, you know, he did. I remember changing all my options for universities.
It
was
all
north. And then I changed one. I put Kent University, Canterbury Christchurch, in as a... They let me change it last minute just in case I needed to be closer to home. And I remember that was about kind of 2001. Okay. 2001. And so I was kind of 16, 17. And so the idea of, you know, you're suddenly faced with the idea of this person you can never imagine not being there. All of a sudden, we had that in our minds. And I remember he had chemotherapy and stuff like that. And I remember, like, we never knew up until we were older that there were a few really kind of close moments, I think.
Wow.
He never let us know that. I remember there was one where I remember him going into hospital, and I remember I didn't know. It was just like a routine thing. He just wasn't feeling very well, reaction to chemotherapy. I remember it all. And the reason why I'm kind of telling this is because he went into remission, but the idea of losing him was actually in my mind from when I was 16, 17. You've got to remember, my brothers are younger than me. So the little ones at the time were kind of what they were like five. My brother was five and another one was four and another one was two. So he had
it was a big age gap.
Yeah, my half brothers were, they were all really young, a lot younger. So it was a tough old time then. But I wouldn't have known it. I wouldn't have known it. And he was encouraging me to still go to university and stuff like that. Unfortunately, you know, he went into remission and he got better, but it was always that fear in my mind.
Once you know it and it's possible, you know it, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I remember he passed away really suddenly. He passed away suddenly in the May. Basically, I remember it was my birthday the week before, and he was away on a golf trip with my brother, and remember my brother Lawrence, he kind of said to me, "There's something, Dad's not right. He's not right." He said, he's not right. There's something wrong with him. He's not himself. He's losing concentration and stuff like that. And I remember him thinking, he was kind of saying, he's having some sort of stroke. He hasn't collapsed, but I'm really worried about him.
Yeah.
And my brother wouldn't put that in my mind unless he was sure. And I remember, like, Dad calling me on the Saturday when I got home. I didn't answer because I was out in Liverpool. And I texted him, I said, "I'll call you Sunday." I called him the Sunday and I said, "Are you all right?" And he didn't seem himself. And I said, "Oh, I'm going to come down on Wednesday and see you." So I was like, "I'm going to do last leg on Wednesday. I'll come down, I'll stay in Kent."
Yeah.
And then Monday night, I was meant to be doing a corporate in Manchester, and I just got a call to say he collapsed after dinner.
Wow.
And it turned out that he'd had, you know, what they call is a catastrophic stroke was what they called it.
Wow.
But it was, I remember driving down. I had to drive down from Huddersfield. I just got the call, come down. I remember I drove down and I remember wanting to hear more because I was like, "Well, hang on a minute, all right, he's collapsed, but he's going to be all right, isn't he?" And they were like, "Well, they're taking him to hospital now." And then once he got to hospital, it was weird because I didn't leave straight away. Because in my head, I still thought he was going to be, he'll be all right.
Okay.
And I remember just getting another call saying, "No, you've got to come down now. Come down." And I just kind of said bye to my wife. And literally, it was just like, I was like shaking. I was just like, I don't know what. The drive down, obviously, it's like 3.5 hours, 4 hours. I remember driving down and I was thinking, "No, I'll be all right. He'll be okay. I'll get there and he'll be okay." But I remember my brother Lawrence was going to say, "Look, mate, he's gone." And I was like, he's not. He's something to be done. Something to be done. And he was there. They were all there.
Wow.
And I kind of got there. And I remember the second I saw him, I mean, I just thought, he was there. He was gone. He was gone the second, within seconds. And, you know, people talk about, I don't know, it's like, how would you want a situation? And people say, "Well, I wouldn't want them to feel pain and things like that." And look, in that, In that, he didn't. He was gone second it happened.
Wow.
The sounds of it is, you know, it was such a bad kind of hemorrhage or whatever it is that it causes.
But he was unwell for a few. You could sense something was wrong with him.
Yeah, and I think that whatever we never as a family we decided we didn't want a post mortem done. You know, there were, you know, if there had been something that was kind of affecting his brain, that maybe that would have brought on the stroke. That we never got a post mortem. We all agreed on it. It wasn't going to change anything. But it was the stroke that did it. Led up to that is, but he wasn't well. And it was weird because I remember the week. I remember there was a couple of texts in the lead up to it, which is, you know, I knew my dad was proud of me. I knew he was proud of me. But he didn't always say. Mm-hmm. He didn't always have to say.
Classic dad.
Yeah, he was always like, he was very practical. So he'd always be like, you know, if I was going out, if he saw me spend any sort of, so it's like when we got a bigger house and stuff like that, it's like, but you're all right though, aren't you? You're not overstretching yourself, because what are you going to do if TV ends? What are you going to do if it ends? And it's like, no, I'm being sensible and stuff like that. And he was a worrier. Mm-hmm. He worried about me. And it was one of those things where I remember he texted me, he WhatsApped me, I think the week and a half before he passed away. And it was just so random. I remember him. I can't remember what he was saying. You're out on the drink again. And he said the same thing from when I was 16 and I started going out to when I was like 35. You're out on the booze again. And it was like there was times I was like, you know, I don't live here anymore. I don't live with you anymore. I'm allowed. Like, I still got nervous, even if I went down to Kent and stayed with him, about going out and getting drunk. Because I remember back in the day when I had operations on my leg, my mates used to, like, I was in a wheelchair because I couldn't use crutches, but we'd go out. And because I was already sat down, you can get as hammered as you like. So I'd get absolutely trolleyed. And my mates would just, like, wheel me home, get me out the taxi, and just park me up.
And bring the door
back. And
then
knock on the door. And, like, obviously come down and be out of the game. So he was always funny about me going out. But I remember him, I can't remember him saying, like, you know, I think I said something like, you know, you do realise that, I know everyone thinks my job's a piss about, but it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And he was like, maybe he just said something like, you know how proud I am. And it's one of those things where I was just like, oh, wow, like, thanks a lot. But it was like, and I was kind of like, oh, he wanted me to know. Mm. And there were a few things he said in the lead up to it. And he was like, you know, you've got to look after your family and stuff like that. And it was weird. It's the sort of stuff which didn't register with me at the time. And it's not like he knew, but like, I'm not into kind of, I don't know that kind of, what's it called, fate. And I don't know about like that sort of thing. That's a different, you know.
Yeah.
But there are stuff that he said in the month or the weeks before, which, you know, and as I said, he never just would text me out of the blue and just say something like that. I knew it, but he wouldn't say that. And it's those sorts of things. And, you know, I take heart from that. It helps in ways. It doesn't make it the pain any less. The fact that, you know, I'm doing this now. I've not really spoken about it before. Certainly, kind of not publicly. And even with my brothers now, we don't always talk about it a lot. We kind of get together on the anniversary of his death. We kind of have the last couple of years. But it's, you know, me and my brother Lawrence, we talked quite a bit about it. And it really hit him hard because he worked at the same place as Dad. They played golf together. They were very much intertwined.
And did he live in Kent as well?
Yeah, he lives in Kent. Yeah. And it was really hard. And we still talk a lot, like even this week. I actually texted him before I did this. And I was like, do you mind me talking about it? And he was like, no, of course not. Of course not. But it was, you know, it was just all of a sudden. One day he was there. I drove down on the Monday. By Tuesday afternoon, he was gone. And he was gone. And there was like, it was almost surreal. I don't think I'll ever come to terms with just how quick, but then how do you, if you know, if you don't know, there's no, that's
you what, can't play top trumps,
no,
can you?
You can't. And there's no, it's almost for a while I was trying to search for solace in certain aspects, but you can't. Mm. It's after a while it hit me that, actually, this thing has happened, which will never, there's nothing ever now that's going to be okay. You know, you can like jobs, relationships. You can go, well, I can, if you're in a bad, I can try and change that. Yeah. I can go to a different job. And this was something where it was like, there is no, it's the first thing that I think had happened to me where it's like, nothing can change. There's nothing.
You can't fix it.
There will never, nothing will ever be okay in about, I'll never be okay about this. Mm. And it's so, it's that's quite an overwhelming feeling. As I'm sure you're aware, is that like, shit.
I get that now. Yeah. It's been 6 years and yeah. I'm in my car sometimes and I'm like, fuck, I'm never going to see my mum again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it's a lot.
Yeah. And it can be overwhelming. Mm. And, you know, I remember, you know, I want to, my big thing is looking after my brothers.
Mm.
And that's like kind of something which, you know, my stepmom, Debbie, is wonderful.
Mm.
And she's always said to me, you know, you're not your dad. It's not your responsibility to look after them all. But at the same time, as the oldest, I take that responsibility. Yeah. And that was what I remember I said to myself just as he passed away.
Mm.
I said, I'll look after them all.
Yeah.
And it's like that I take that. I get emotional about it because it means a lot. Yeah. To me, to
you love
try and
them,
look after them. Yeah,
you?
I do. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we could fight and stuff like that. But it means a lot to me. So when, you know, one of them is in trouble or something like that, that's something I, you know, even now I feel like, oh, I'm not doing enough. I'm so busy with work. And one of the big, you know, I listened to this podcast when I found this podcast, and I'm not like just saying it was actually one of the first times where I've started to like kind of think about my own grief, and I found it really comforting to listen to you guys and the experiences and kind of coping and things like that. And one of the big things was kind of these feelings of guilt you have.
Yeah.
Why didn't I just bin off Liverpool on the Saturday? Why didn't I just go down there? Why didn't I go down more? And I've struggled with it for so long, was the feelings of guilt. You know, I was so wrapped up in my career. You're wrapped up in, you know, obviously I've got my own family, I've got my own kids and stuff like that. And I was kind of wrapped up in those sorts of things. And you're full of regret what you could and could have done. But the problem with that is you tie yourself up in knots. You can't change it. No, you can't.
And also, would you live your life differently? Because it's so hard, isn't it? Like, at what point does it become enough to be spending time with them? Do you know what I mean? At what point do you think, okay, I'm not going to feel guilty now when they die? Because I think even if you spent all the time with them in the world, you're still going to find reasons to feel guilty, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. And there's a lot of feelings of guilt that, you know, I feel sometimes. And, you know, there's little things. I remember him coming to a Christmas show just before. My last night out with him was the Christmas. So he passed away in May, but my last night out with him was a Christmas in 2018. And I remember Harry Hill was putting on a charity gig, and it was comedians singing Christmas songs. And me and Josh Widdicombe sang Fairy Tale of New York. And I remember I met up for a drink with him, and he was out with all of his workmates. And he, you know, I saw a guy called Andy, who was his best man from when he got married to my stepmom, and hadn't seen him for years. And like, Dad was so desperate for me to stay out, and I said, I've got to go to this rehearsal, Dad. I've got to go. They're expecting me there. I've got to go. And there's part of me that I sit there and I just think, oh, I wish I'd have just stayed.
Mm.
Wish I'd have stayed. Wish I'd have got pissed with him and stuff like that. And it, you know, I could see he was so proud of me. So proud of me with all of his workmates, and he was like, "Yeah, not, you know, my boy's done good." And
oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely, and at the same time, it's, you know, I've done therapy. I started therapy before my dad passed away, but like one of the things that I was talking with my therapist about is actually these feelings that these memories, they hurt, they hurt, and I get emotional, but at the same time, that it's because they're good. It's because there was a lot of love there. And I feel very lucky to have had that. And I tried to
rather than focus on how difficult it is to try and, you know, is think of, well, actually, it's because these were good times, and isn't that something to cherish?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so it's coming up for 3 years, and it's, I remember the week he passed away on the Tuesday. I had last leg on the Friday. I just said, so I'm not coming in on the Wednesday. But by Thursday, I wanted to go in. Yeah. I wanted to do the show.
You want that kind of sense of normality, yeah. I think, in a way. And it's a bit of an escape, because when somebody dies, you kind of, were you still in Kent at this point, or had you come back up north to be with your family?
Still in Kent. I was still in Kent.
It's a bit of a limbo. It's a bit of a weird time.
Yeah. I remember ringing up my producer and just saying, please, please put me in. Mm. He was like, mate, we can't. He was like, he was like ignoring the fact that I'm your kind of boss, is, or as your mate, I can't let you come in. You need this time, believe me. Mm. You need this time. And at the time I was like, it was worse, because I tell you what, they were like, oh, it's okay, the show will be fine. I was like, I just said to him, can you talk me through what's in the show?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what you're doing then. And we kind of talked about what's in the show, and like, then they were like, oh, like, you know, it's fine, you know, we've got someone in. Like, I remember they said, like, Rob Beckett's coming into a place. I was like, don't replace me with someone better. Like, he's one of the best comedians in the country. Like, don't replace me with him. Oh, have you done that? And it was a thing where I was just like,
it's the last thing that my dad's just died.
Yeah, it's like, you know, don't replace me with someone who's loads better, like Rob. And it was, there was a feeling that I wanted to come in and do the show, and I didn't. And I remember it was, you know, for us, because we're live, it's the idea of missing the show is a big thing. And yeah. I remember the wording they used was it was a family bereavement and stuff like that. We didn't want to say it was my dad. And weird enough, the following week is, you know, I didn't want there to be any kind of, I didn't mention it on the show. Yeah. I didn't mention it anywhere. And, you know, I never put anything on my Instagram or anything like that. And it was mainly because of, like, I just felt like my dad would have gone, that's a bit wanky. Yeah. And, you know, he's, you know, that's what he was like. And he'd have gone, oh, don't be like that. That'd be a sloppy bastard and stuff like that. And I was like, that's kind of the way I thought about it. And kind of time moved on. And, you know, I remember, you know, kind of the funeral just went in a blur and leading up to that, and the amount of people that were there. And it was, I mean, people queuing outside. And, you know, because he worked in the railway, it's a real old school kind of, you know, being in the railway from when he was like kind of 16, and it's like a real old school industry. So people have come from Croydon and all these people who'd worked with, and it showed you how well respected he was. And that was a real, you know, I mean, it's from my younger brothers as well. You know, my brother was, he's little and hadn't even been born. She was born a little while after.
How old is your youngest brother?
So my youngest one is, God, I'll tell you, honestly, I've got so many. Hang on.
Yeah, there is an absolute crew of you.
So my little brother, Ed, my youngest brother was 2000, so he's 23, I think he's a youngster.
There's no wonder you feel that kind of pressure to be that kind of father figure, kind of the one that's there for them, because I think, you know, it's young.
And I remember, you know, I took him away. He's such a lovely, like, kind of shy young lad, and he, you know, I took him away with me and my mate. I did a show for Channel 4 where we tried to swim the channel. Mm. And I remember, like, the week after I booked to go away, me and my mate John, I took my brother with me. And I remember he hadn't really been travelling or anything like that. And I was like, don't you worry, mate, this is on me. I'll give you some stories. I remember I got us a speedboat from the airport in Croatia, got us a speedboat over to this island called Hvar.
It was
like, normally, like, you get the catamaran or the ferry.
Yeah,
we got a speedboat. It was pimp. And like that whole week, like, kind of, you know, we stayed in an incredible place, and it was like, I really wanted for him to have like this kind of happy memories and to spend time with him, and it was lovely. And, you know, it's difficult because we're all, you know, we're six blokes, we all live our own lives. As I said, one of my other brothers, his daughter was born shortly after dad passed, and, you know, things like that. And it's hit us all in
in different ways. And it's even the other day, one of my brothers, sorry, I keep saying brothers. People are going to get confused. Who are you talking about now?
One of the many.
But yeah, my brother Lawrence, he put a thing on our family WhatsApp group of, you know, there was a bench at the golf club where my dad used to play, and he didn't even know they'd done this bench in memory of him. And he was like, he's put a picture up, and I was crying. I said to him, Jesus Christ, like, I'm gone, nice and I'm one. Not even there. Yeah. But fuck knows how you feel. Aww. And he, you know, it's...
Did he just stump, was he playing
the
ground of golf?
Yeah, he was playing, and someone said to him, oh, you've seen your dad's bench? Aww. And he was like, what bench? They never told us. My stepmom didn't know either. And it's a lovely gesture.
Yeah.
I was getting on the train to Leeds after a show on a Friday. I was getting the train up on a Saturday, and some blokes come over to me just as I was getting on at King's Cross, and they're like, oh, we knew your dad. He's very much missed. And I'm just like, I was like, oh, thanks a lot. And then just burst into tears.
Yeah.
Burst into tears.
Hearing that about your parent is the nicest feeling ever, but also makes you cry.
Yeah, it broke my heart. Mm. And like, my brother's saying, oh, they kind of got a message to him that they were really sorry for. Mm. I was like, well, they shouldn't be, because it was lovely.
Mm.
What a lovely thing. I was just a mess. Yeah. I just, honestly, it was like, the way I could describe it is like, almost, if you like took a toy of a child, I just literally was fine. And I was just like, gone. And I was just on the train. I was just like.
Do you feel like you're in a film when that happens?
Yeah, it really was. And it was really hard to try and like calm myself down. And I find myself, those moments of emotion, you know, certainly with my girls, they're a bit young, and it's kind of, I sometimes feel guilty because I don't talk about dad to them all the time. And I think a part of that is because it's trying to help for them to understand it is a difficult thing. Also, for me, I think from my point of view, is that I know I'll get upset, and I know that I don't want to be upset in front of them. But at the same time, it's like my therapist said to me today, wouldn't it be good for them to see that their daddy can be upset about something, then okay.
Yeah.
And that's weird, because that's what I want from them. If they kick off, or they have a tantrum, or they're upset, I want them to then be okay.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I kind of, it's weird, because I used the phrase today. I was like, you know, I don't do it because I'll get too upset. And she said, two, what do you mean?
Is there such a thing?
Yeah. And then it was kind of one of those things where I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get upset.
Yeah.
She was like, there's no quantifiable amount.
Mm.
And actually, you know, a lot of kind of the therapy work I've done is kind of, you know, pressure coping, all stuff to do with work and things like that. But in terms of grief, it's actually, there's not really like, there's no answers.
No guidebook, is there?
No, there's not. No. And in other behaviours, you know, you can kind of train your mind to feel a certain way. I was having panic attacks before work, before doing live shows.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I can change. I can control breathing, all of these things, you know, how you approach things, how you approach, you know, your communications with other people, your relationships. You can change all of those. You can change how you feel, how you react in a situation. Whereas actually with grief, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. It is what it is. And it's. I feel like sometimes when I talk to my brothers that, you know, we're all guilty, I think. Not guilty, but guilty is the wrong word, but we've all bottled up a certain amount and kind of got on with life. And it is. It's really, it's tough. It's tough. And I, you know, we've got together last year when dad passed, and we got absolutely hammered. We just got drunk together. And it's like one of those things where at the time it's good to have us all out and have us all together. But I mean, it's like the next day is a massive come down with the hangover. And it's, you know, I kind of check in on them. I went home a couple of weekends ago, and I just want them all to be okay. And I think maybe, you know, for me, as I say, I feel this real intense responsibility that no one's given me.
Mm.
You know, my dad never said to me,
"You better look after
them. If anything ever happens to me,
it's all down to you.
It's all on you." And my stepmom's never said, "Alex, I need you to talk to him." But I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel it, and it's sometimes I feel like I'm letting them down. I'm not. Have I checked in on them enough? Oh God, I've got, you know, I'm worried about this thing that we're doing at work. Oh God, I'm so stressed out about doing, you know, starting to do stand up or whatever. Oh God, am I going to be crap? And I'm worried on the kids and things like that and the stuff at home. And then it's like, I'm like, oh God, I've not made sure they're all right. And
yeah,
that's a real kind of thing for me where I remember just the January after my dad passed, we all stayed in like a big house in Wales, and my auntie, my dad's sister, and all my cousins were over from Australia, and it was amazing. And it was so incredible to have the family together at that point. And it's, you know, that's the sort of thing I'd love us to do more of, because it's the only way we're going to feel, not better, better's the wrong word, you're never going to feel better.
You appreciate it more, I think, than now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I have a similar sort of situation, because everybody always said that my mum was the glue that held the family together, because it was just me, my mum, and then my dad and two brothers. So like we were outnumbered, and now I am obviously drastically outnumbered.
Yeah.
But I actually, you know, it kind of annoys me now, but when I was 20, I had people in my family, not my direct family, but my extended family, saying to me, oh, you know, it's going to be down to you now to keep everybody together. Make sure you keep in contact with your brothers and stuff. Bear in mind, I'm the youngest by 7 and 9 years, by quite a lot. But I feel that, like I feel that need to call them, check up on them, checking on my dad. My dad is also, I'm basically my dad's parent now. Literally.
Yeah.
But you kind of, I don't know whether it's kind of like the responsibility as a woman and being the only woman left in the family, I feel like I need to keep tabs on them, but it just adds to your to-do list, and you don't want it to end up being another thing that you have to do that's a chore. I think that's the hard line, I think, to cross, where you're like, okay, I want to be doing this because I obviously want to, but also I don't want to make myself feel like I'm a shit person for not doing it.
I think there's also an element where, certainly for me, a lot of it was, well, if I do this, this will make me feel better about their passing.
Yeah.
If I've somehow...
I'm doing them a service.
Yeah, I'm kind of helping out, and it's like it hasn't. If I'm honest, it makes me feel better because I love my brothers, I love my stepmom. You know, that makes me feel better, is just like being like a decent brother, being a decent stepson and stuff like that. That would, it's those sorts of.
And I'm sure you would be if you didn't call them every week.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know. Hopefully. It's not for me to judge, but yeah, it is. It's that sort of thing where I kind of hope that I kind of threw myself into that, it would make me feel better. And to an element, it kind of does, but it's never going to make it better that dad's passed away. And it's so difficult. I find there's stuff all the time, and I'm sure you feel it, where I'd love to talk to him about it. You know, I did a documentary a couple of years ago for BBC about my disability, and I started to talk. For the first time, I started to think about, and that's like a big thing from like therapy, is to kind of think about all these different aspects, not just yourself. You kind of start to understand how your mind works. And I started to think about what it was like for mum and dad, and my mum's there, but also for my dad. And, I wish I'd have had that conversation with him. You know, I remember those conversations were few and like far between. He was always, you know, my mum always wanted to kind of wrap me up with cotton wool, whereas my dad was like, get him out there, go out and play football.
Kick him out the front door.
Yeah, go out and play football. Don't, like, you know, go to mainstream schooling, no special schooling, no, none of that. Just get him out there.
And that was a big, that's a big reason why I feel like I've been able to live the life that I have, is because I've always been out there. I've never been afraid of putting myself out there. And I feel like there's still, there's always times now where little jobs have come up, you know, in the last couple of weeks I've had things come up that I'm going to do. And it would, I think, God, I wish I could tell him, wish I could share that with him. Some of the stuff I've done the last few years, I wish he'd have been there. I wish, you know, I did the Sink or Swim show for Channel 4. Like, it was what, it was, so it was only, we did that swim, it was less than 4 months after he passed away. Wow. I went almost straight into, like, the situation where I was training to do swim, part of a relay right. across the channel. But my dad was a big swimmer. He was a really strong swimmer. And it was like, oh, man, I wish he'd have been there. And, you know, the weather scuppered us finishing. But I remember thinking, I wish, God, imagine if we do it. I wish he could have seen it. And I, like, you know, it's there's so many things like that. With my girls, I wish, you know, so wish he could have seen, like, the girls that they've become. And
yeah.
I look back on all the photos and just, you know, he's one of those parents where he's like, I ain't going to be up, you mean me, good to me. I ain't going to be like your mum. I ain't going to be up every week seeing them. I love them. I love my grandchildren. Love them to bits. But I don't want to see them. And it was like that honesty.
I love the honesty.
Yeah, I love that you knew where you stood. Yeah. And there was like, you know, he didn't have to come up all the time.
Yeah.
He liked to stay at home. And, you know, God, he loved those girls, loved them to bits. Mm. And it's the same with us boys. It's like he loved us to bits. He didn't need, it was like one of those things where it kind of goes on. You don't need to have that all the time. And I feel like that set us all in good stead. But there are so many things, just, you know, gosh, I wanted to do a show where I'm going to start playing golf and things like that and get adapted clubs, and I've actually been putting it off because it's so, my dad loved golf. I'm the only one of, like, my brothers who does not really play golf, so, and I've kind of, even now, it's like the idea of going out and doing it is, like, it's not, I'm not going to be any good. Obviously, I'm not. But it's like, it's, you
don't
know,
doubt yourself.
No, I mean, it's just sheer physics, sheer biology. But it's with the best will in the world. But there's parts of it where I put that off because I wish, you know, I would have loved to have seen, would love to have him to have seen that. And it's really difficult.
It's what nobody tells you. Like, I know nobody tells you how to prepare for somebody that you love dying. But it's the fact that nobody tells you that you actually feel that again and again and again. Like, every new thing that happens in your life that you can't share with them. And I think that's the thing that I found the hardest, like, as the years went on. And like, now, I'm like, God, it really is, like, it is a constant journey and a constant kind of battle to kind of be able to process it. And like you said earlier, it's learning to sit with it and accept that it is just what it is. And trying, it's obviously, like, you know, you've been going to therapy and stuff. It's trying to kind of build those building blocks that kind of help you cope in some way or form.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's like, I'm sure people listening, it's like, you know, because I've been to therapy. It's more of like a wellness thing, if I'm honest. It's not about grief.
Yeah.
Because there's no, my therapist said today, it's not like this, it's just talking. There's no like, there aren't, like, scientific...
You can't go to therapy for 6 weeks and be like, I'm all griefed out.
Yeah, I'm done. And it's like, you know, or it's the sort of the idea that people be like, oh, well, you know, I need to cope with this better. There's no such thing as, there's no better or worse. And it's like, I worry about my brothers. I worry about how they are coping. I worry about my stepmom. But there's still part of me where it's, I don't know, it's... everyone to their own. I can't tell them, I couldn't possibly tell them how to be. So my brother and my stepmom, you know, I spoke to both of them about doing this. I was like, do you mind me talking about it? No, of course not. Like, my brother said, you do what you talk as you want.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's a weird, maybe it's slightly weird that I was not worried, not at all. I didn't think for a second they'd go, no. But it's like, I suppose it's that, I don't know. I just kind of almost wanted some reassurance, I suppose.
I suppose it's different for you as well, because, like, you have a platform, so it's, you know, it's a very personal story for you and for your family.
Yeah,
I think I would probably be the same.
I think it's a weird one, you know. I don't know, on Facebook, it's like I'll put something up. I never put anything up on my Instagram, but on, like, Facebook, I put something up, and then you get lots of people they're all well wishing and it's lovely, but at the same time, it's like
nobody else really gives a fuck.
Well, no, it's just a part of me. It's like there's nothing. Nothing's. This isn't going to make seeing these likes.
Yep.
It doesn't make you feel better. No. You know, someone's just put the emoji on Facebook with a little crying tear emoji. And it's like, oh, okay, then. And it's like, that's not made me feel better. And I get it. People are just being lovely, but yeah. it's that sort of thing where it's really difficult. It is difficult, and you know, it doesn't really make any difference ultimately. Yeah. But at the same time, there are things where I try to think, there's things I do day to day where, or situations where I think, what would my dad do?
Yeah.
What would my dad say?
Yeah.
What would my dad say in this situation? And I say it all the time to my stepmom, to my mum, and like to my brothers. Like, what would dad have thought about this?
I think that's the best way to keep them alive. I think it's one of the easiest ways to keep them with you, because it's so easy to move on with your life and keep yourself busy. Like, I know that you said when you first messaged the podcast page, and you'd mentioned on that you hadn't really started processing your grief really until, I think that might have been maybe nearly a year ago now when you sent that. But like, do you think that it's doing stuff like that that's kind of, have you started doing that more since you've kind of begun thinking about it more or talking about it?
Yeah, I think I have to an extent. I remember listening to the one that you guys did with siblings.
Oh yeah,
and I remember Emma's brother. Yeah, was on, and like that, I was bawling my eyes out in the car. And I'm like, I remember that was like, because it was because I was like, oh yeah, this is these feelings that I've kind of maybe just been pushing down. It was like, it's okay to feel a certain way, and. I think that's helpful. It's weird. One of the big things that I kind of was saying to my brother about doing this. I was like, I think actually I want to do it because I think it's helpful to me. It's helpful to me to talk about it. And you know, I don't talk about it at home all the time. I don't talk about it at work because it feels like there's so much else going on. It's just one of those things where I don't talk about it all the time. I don't talk about it with all my mates. And one of my mates, his dad passed away shortly after. And there is a feeling where you kind of resign to the fact it's just nothing's going to make it okay. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that there aren't ways where feel better feels like the wrong word. But to make peace is the wrong word.
Ease the pain a little bit maybe.
Ease and, you know, and maybe understand some of it maybe is maybe a better, you know, once you kind of get an understanding. As I said, I spent a long time thinking of an idea of I need to get over this, or I need to get around this. I need to get my head in the game. You know, especially because, you know, the week I missed one show and I went back in and I was like doing back into work, and it's like I threw myself into it, and it's almost like I need to get my head in the game. I need to focus on this.
Yeah.
And actually, it's the wrong way to think, really, because it ain't going to go nowhere.
No.
And all you're doing is kind of delaying. Yeah. All you're doing is delaying a feeling that will never change. And it's not, as I said, the word make your peace with it is not quite right, but I have kind of accepted the fact that there's nothing that will ever make this better now. And it's just doing things day to day, thinking about him. I think about him every day. And it's one of those things where that's all you can do. That's all anyone can do. And I've stopped quantifying my grief. What should or shouldn't be enough. Stopped it. It's not, it's just unlike anything else. You know, like a relationship goes wrong. I need to get over this.
You do need to get over it.
Yeah, people will take you out and they'll go, we're going to help you get over this.
Yeah.
We need you to. You need to move on.
Yeah.
Whereas with grief, it's like that one emotion, which there isn't really moving on as such. There is moving, and even sometimes there's not moving, and both are okay.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've learned so much over the last few years. So many situations that it's never like one or the other. Two things can be true at the same time, and they can be completely different.
Happy and sad.
Yeah, you can, both of those are acceptable to be okay.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with either. And that's kind of that. Sometimes certainly with my brothers, is if they're not okay, then I'm going to leave them to be that way.
I can't help. I'm not going to be able to make it better for them.
Mm.
And I just think as a family, it's just to try and be closer, and that will give you some comfort. I think it gives me comfort. It gives me comfort when we all get together. There was a thing that we do before Christmas where we'd all go out, my dad and my brothers, just before Christmas. And like, God, I remember one year ended up like.
Brothers, I would love to brothers, see this, you know.
Two of my brothers got a bit leery, got involved as well. We'd all had a few. And it's like dad's gone home at that point. But there wasn't, you know, it's you
I
know,
bet six, the bunch six, of you have got some hella stories.
Yeah, six of us together. Mm. But at the same time, it's like they're my dad's legacy.
Yeah. All six of you are.
Yeah, all six of us are. Yeah. And we're what he left. Yeah. What he left. And there's a comfort in that. You wouldn't think it to look at
comfort
us,
in the chaos.
Yeah, there is a comfort in that, and that's what he left behind. Mm. And I think he would have wanted us to look after each other. And I hope that, you know, he's looking down. And there are things sometimes when I think so many things that kind of opportunities that have come my way, and it's easy that idea of fate and all of that.
A lot of
business.
People lean on that after somebody's died. It's a very common theme.
Yeah, it was. I remember shortly after he passed away, we were still down in Kent. So it must have been only the week. It might have been the weekend after. My brother had everyone to his house, and I remember him putting this. He was just putting, like, there was just music on, and we were all outside, and the kids were all there. All the, you know, the grandkids were there, and I remember this Chris Rea song came on. And I hadn't heard it. I remember when my dad used to drive me to go and get my legs. And I remember it's so mad because I used to love it because I'd get the morning off of school and I'd try and like, they'd give
new
me
leg
the,
day.
New leg day. They'd give me the legs and I'd be like, this ain't right. And it was. I just didn't want to go back to school. Mm. But I remember he always used to listen to things like Chris Rea in the car. And I remember like hearing this song and I said to my brother, I was like, oh, did you put that on because it reminded you of dad, and you went, no, it's just on shuffle. Oh. And I remember it freaked me out. It freaked me to fuck out. I'll be honest with you, because we were all there, we were all thinking of him, and just at that one moment.
That's so weird.
And it is that sort of thing where it was almost like he was there, as if he was going, like, I don't know.
Saying hi.
Yeah. And I know it seems it's not mad, maybe, but it's one of those things that
I can assure you, everyone listening to this will be like, yeah, I've had a moment like that.
There, and it is. And it's like, it was like, first of all, I don't know, it gave me a sense of comfort in a way. And I feel like there's plenty of those moments where I think, I don't know, it's like he's there. It's like he's there sometimes. And certainly when I'm still at the house and, you know, I go into his kind of little cave, his little man cave that he had and, like, all of that sort of thing, I still feel like it's like he's not gone.
I was saying to somebody the other day, cause whenever there's a sunset, I was telling him, like, I was like, oh, amazing sunset today. And he was like, Kat, why are you always telling me when there's a really nice sunset every single time? Yeah. And I was like, I love them. Like, I love them so much because I know that my mum liked them, but for some reason, I see an amazing sunset and I say out loud, like, hi, mum. And it's just something that I do. And it just, for some reason, it just makes me feel like she's there.
Yeah.
Like, that's her. I don't know what it is, but you just feel like a comfort from it. And I think even if you don't believe in fate and all that kind of stuff, I think it's nice if you feel a comfort with something. Like, why not have that?
Yeah.
Like, why not?
But also, like, who's to say it's not true?
Well, yeah.
That's the thing.
We don't know, do we? We don't have a bloody clue.
This is a whole other podcast. But there is an element of who's to say that there's not something in it that we don't know. And, yeah, it's kind of with stuff. There's still things that I find quite painful, like the music that they played when in the crematorium, when the music when it goes behind the curtain, the coffin goes behind the curtain. I can't listen to it.
Same, I can't succeed.
I can't, and it's like, it sends me, it's one of those things where I thought, there was a weird time, so afterwards,
I remember about a year later, I was like trying to listen, like almost like I was trying to make myself listen to it in the car without crying.
That's not and a very fun
just,
game.
No, it wasn't. It was a shit game. It was a shit game on the M62. And the M62 is crap at the best of times. Anyone who's been on it will tell you.
Yeah.
And it's not a good, and it's like, you know, all it did was make me emotional.
Mm.
And people are like, I don't know what the other cars must have thought with. And I'm like, I mean, look.
State I mean,
he's gone
him.
On the M62 at 5 o'clock. What's he expecting? He's taking this bad.
That's me coming here.
He's taking this bad. It's like, I don't know what's got him. It's because this is the highest motorway in Britain. I don't know. It's just the attitude. But there was, I remember trying to do that. And I kind of look back at that, those kind of, you have to go through it though.
Yeah.
I think I had to do that ridiculous thing to feel kind of how
sometimes
how
you actually
now.
Force yourself to feel the pain. You know, if you feel yeah. like you need to have a bit of a cry or you just want to feel sad about it.
Yeah.
Putting that kind of music on, wow, it really does bits.
Yeah, it does. And there's a thing where sometimes I think that we should allow, I think to myself, I should allow myself more time to just be upset.
Mm.
And there is a tendency to hold it in. If I feel upset about a thing, is to hold it in. And actually, it's just all that's doing is bottling it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel getting it out is the best way. And I kind of look back and think, how did I go through those times? Like trying to force myself to be upset about these things.
I actually think it's good to schedule time out every yeah. month sometimes to be like, okay, I'm gonna have an afternoon,
yeah,
or like a half hour there where I'm gonna listen to all the songs that remind me of it,
yeah.
Or I'm gonna go to a place that reminds me of them and actually let myself be sad, because I think life is so busy,
yeah,
and it's so easy to get so swept up in it that you actually don't give yourself any time, and suddenly you're like, God, I'm feeling really crap, I'm feeling pent up, I'm feeling sad, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I haven't actually given myself any space to yeah. feel. For
yeah,
a while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's kind of something that I think I need to do more of.
Mm.
I think I'll, you know, showing the kids the photos on the phone. They like to see the photos. We've got the photos up on the wall and stuff like that, but I feel like it's a big thing for me.
Mm.
Is to talk to them about him and to show. There was a moment I remember showing the kids the photos of them. They love seeing photos of when they were babies.
Mm-hmm.
Going through on the phone. And like sharing them, it's the ones of dad.
Oh.
Scroll past really quickly because I was suddenly like gone, and it's like, and then afterwards I felt shit because I felt guilty because I've not shared that with them,
yeah,
and not gone. That was your granddad.
Yeah.
He thought you look were amazing, and it's like it's really there's it's not worth torturing myself over that because there, as I said, there's no right or wrong.
No.
I feel and that's the. Kind of in terms of my journey where I'm at now, kind of going into 3 years, and it's still so raw, but I can't imagine there coming a time when I'm in 20 years time when I'm like, oh no, it's like feels all right actually.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, there will always be moments, especially with the kids and
Definitely.
Things they do and things you do every week. This stuff where I find myself like I used to get road rage, and there's stuff where I get it, and it's like that's just like what my dad would have done.
Yeah,
I remember seeing it when I was a kid, and it's like I know that's not good, all of that sort of thing, but it is like that sort of thing where there is part of me where I don't know. Like my dad was like that. He just tells someone to f off. And
yeah,
there's part of me that's like, ah,
you're gonna start owning that now.
it's like that dad would have. By the way, he wasn't like a gobshite. There is part of me where it's like.
I feel like we all turn
that.
A bit gobshite when we're in traffic.
Yeah, exactly. There is sometimes there's stuff where I like to, or, you know, I'll react in a way that he would have.
Mm. And you notice it so much more now.
Yeah,
you
do.
And you actually appreciate it, even if it's a shit quality.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, you know, I remember. It's weird because I did my documentary and they were kind of like, oh, when you were at school, like, what sort of advice? People go, oh, do you know. Get rid of, like, you didn't get bullied. What sort of advice did your parents give you? Mm. And I remember my dad just saying, anyone says anything to you, just boot them with your leg. And I remember you think about
that's
that
iconic.
As, you think about that as advice. it's debatable to get advice to give to a 6-year-old, but my God, I don't half look back on it with fondness.
Yeah,
don't half look back on it. And it's like, obviously,
We're not condoning violence, but that was
you've
that
got to
was
do
my
what you've got to
but
do,
that was
to be
my
honest.
Upbringing. Yeah. That was my upbringing, and there's and I'm kind of whatever we're right or wrong or whether it's by certain parenting manuals. I'm proud of it, and it keeps me thinking of him.
I was actually going to ask you one of the questions that we like to ask to kind of finish the episode is. You would like to kind of bring that person to life a little bit for people listening, and also gives you an opportunity to talk about your dad because we don't always get the chance to do it. But I was going to ask you what your kind of favourite memory is of your dad. I love this
I've
question because people always light
I've
up.
Got, yeah, I've got there's so many. There's there's so
you can stay for another hour if you want. You can write a book.
There's so many. I think that there's a picture that I have as on my phone. And it's of me and my dad, and we're at this pub opposite Stratford, opposite the Olympic Stadium. And basically, I'd just finished the Paralympics, It's like all of a sudden my life had changed in 9 days. And I remember he was there with a load of workmates, and he was like, I was staying in a hotel nearby, and he was like, come and have a drink. Come and have a drink with us all. I remember going, and like, it was the first time I'd seen him since like telly had exploded suddenly. No, in less than 2 weeks my life had changed, and I remember like how proud he was. I mean, it was insane, and it was that for me is that was a lovely memory. Yeah. And I've all the time when times in my career have got difficult, I kind of certain last few years I think about that. Honestly, this photo, it's just he's just beaming, and I'm. It's lovely. He's so proud. It's a wonderful. It's such a lovely memory to have had, and I realised that I didn't have to go on telly to make him proud.
Yeah,
I didn't. But it's just one of those things, and there's loads of there's so many like kind of things. I remember him coming to watch me play football when I was about 14. He came and watched me, and I was so pleased that he'd come and I think I scored. It was like I was playing disability football, and I remember I just got into it, and I remember I scored something stupid in this five-side tournament. So I'm like 14 goals in 3 games, and I was just like, at the end he was like going, go easy now. And I remember I was like, but I'll never be as good as that again. And there were like things like that where I kind of think about, and it was also some of the kids were more disabled than this. He's like, seriously, don't go easy. Like, some of these, I know you're all disabled, but some of them are definitely more disabled than you. So he was a figure. It's like, all right. But I didn't give a shit.
No, I bet you didn't.
And I remember playing the school football and him getting me these boots and things like that. And those memories are kind of, I wish, sometimes I've got fondness for them. I wish I'd have had the awareness to go.
Hindsight.
To go. Like I didn't think about how hard it must have been for him when I was younger, and what it must have been like to, I remember I told a story about the idea of him. I remember he bought me some football shoes or some trainers, and I think that my granddad or someone had said to him after I was born, "Well, you're not going to need them now." It breaks my heart, that story. It breaks my heart, but at the same time, it's like, well, they were wrong.
Yeah.
They were wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember he told me that story.
I think that those kind of comments, I think, light a fire, I think, in your parents. I know it lit a fire in my grandma. She was like, I'm going to make sure this.
I think that's it. And look, also, I don't, I'm not like angry at that comment because of its time. It's a different generational. It's a different time. It's 1984. But there's, there's things where I do now, and I wish he'd have been able to see it, but I'm sure he knows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As I said, that London 2012 was just wonderful. It was brilliant. It was lovely.
I've got to say, Alex, I've loved this, and for somebody that hasn't spoken about it in depth before,
yeah, no, I've really gone on and on
with a stranger. honestly, you've been absolutely wonderful, and I think you've like captured things so well that I think people aren't able to for actually a really long time afterwards. So I really, really appreciate you coming on and talking about your dad. And
thank you. Thank you for, and also thank you to you and Emma for this podcast. It's brilliant.
It's all about storytelling, isn't it?
Yeah, and it really helped me. And that's why, you know, when I got in touch with you guys, I just think it's brilliant. So thank you. And thank you for giving me the chance to talk about him. You know, otherwise I'd have just been...
I've loved it. I'd have been
watching the Champions League and Arsenal aren't even in it. And not, you know,
what's the point?
Yeah, I'd have just been watching City spank someone. So I really, but genuinely, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
It's funny, I really value that the podcast. Like in my day to day life, I don't talk about my mum that often. Like, I do try and shoehorn her in at any possibility because that's who I am as a person. I'm like, by the way, my mum's died. I try and bring her up, and I'm lucky I've got friends in work that have, you know, lucky and unlucky, but they've experienced something similar. But there is something so nice about just sitting opposite somebody and just having.
Yeah, also, I feel guilty because I've just talked and I feel like I haven't you talk
I've
enough.
I've talked about my mum plenty, don't worry.
I feel like I've just met you and
this
it's
is
like,
your
no,
therapy
was,
session,
no,
not mine.
Was, no, it's kind of, you know, no, he was, you know, obviously we share something, but no, it's mainly, he really, it was mainly all him. He didn't really listen to what I was.
No, you've been brilliant.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast. Don't forget you can get in touch with us across social media and on our email address. You can drop us an email at hello@deadparentclub.co.uk. Contact us on Instagram at Dead Parent Club Podcast, on Twitter at DPCC Podcast, and on Facebook at Dead Parent Club. There we
go. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.